Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. Now, you've just heard from Phil Berg, one of the great protagonists of the enlightened anti-Obama opposition. Remember, this is a Democrat talking. Somebody who actually supported Hillary Clinton did Phil Berg in the beginning of the primaries. Former Democratic state committee man, former Democratic county chairman, Democratic candidate for the posts of senator and governor of the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. So the real opposition to Obama started where? Well, among what we can call Puma Democrats. Now, the right-wingers were very, very slow on all of this stuff. And then let's note the activities of another figure in this opposition. That is Larry Sinclair. Larry Sinclair is announcing that his book will finally appear as a printed book. Printed books do take a while. People should understand this and be patient. The book in question, Barack Obama and Larry Sinclair, Cocaine, Sex, Lies, and Murder? Question mark. Barack Obama and Larry Sinclair, Cocaine, Sex, Lies, and Murder, Sinclair Publishing. Now, if you want to get a copy of this, you can pre-order at Barnes & Noble. Barnes & Noble, the place to go for Larry Sinclair. And let me just give you a little bit of the blurb that Larry has put out. The biggest untold story of the 2008 U.S. presidential election. Finally, we get the no-holds-barred, 100% true story of Barack Obama's use and sale of cocaine, his homosexual affairs, and the Christmas Eve 2007 murder of Obama's former lover and choir director of Obama's Chicago church of 20 years, Donald Young, just days before the 2008 Iowa caucus. Larry Sinclair then goes on to write, "This searingly candid story begins with Barack Obama meeting Larry Sinclair in November of 1999, subsequently procuring and selling cocaine, and then the encounter of Sinclair with Obama on November 6th and again on November 7th, 1999. You will read in riveting detail how Sinclair in 2007 repeatedly contacted and requested that the Obama campaign simply come clear about their candidate's 1999 drug use and sale. You will learn how the Obama campaign, David Axelrod, and Barack Obama used Donald Young, the lover of Obama, it is alleged, to contact and seek out information from Sinclair about to what extent he had divulged word of Obama's crimes and actions." And then he's got a part about the attempt, the discrediting operation against Larry Sinclair, conduited through various people. The role of the nefarious MSNBC, Chris Matthews, Keith Olbermann, the New York Times, CNN, Politico, the Daily Kos, Huffington Post, attacking the National Press Club for allowing Larry Sinclair to give a news conference there. Larry Sinclair then arrested on a warrant written by the corrupt Joe Biden's even more corrupt son, Delaware Attorney General Beau Biden, an arrest warrant, completely false fabricated charges to attempt to discredit Sinclair. And in this phase, we get even the threat of life in prison for political dissidents coming from Beau Biden to Larry Sinclair. Then the nefarious actions of the media, but also the Chicago Police Department, FBI, Delaware Attorney General, and so forth. So that's a blockbuster. And whatever your opinions may be, you've got to evaluate the evidence. This is a first-person narrative, and it's called Barack Obama and Larry Sinclair, Cocaine, Sex, Lies, and Murder? And that's to be pre-ordered now on Barnes & Noble. Author is Larry Sinclair. So that's a piece of political news, right? It's something that you should be aware of. Now, let us return to the issues of the moment. We have Senator Tom Daschle, former Senator Tom Daschle, the senator from Citibank. You'll remember him. He was going to become the healthcare czar of Obama, and he was knocked out of the box because he was a tax cheat. He was a tax evader. So tax evasion by Daschle gets you a polite request to pay up. For the rest of us, something different, as we know. So Daschle now comes out in a meeting with James Baker III, the idea man for Bush the Elder, saying it's time to scrap the public option. No public option. Now, one person who went in crisis as a result of this is Ed Schultz, the pseudo progressive demagogue who is on Air America, and he's got his own show on MSNBC, because, of course, Ed Schultz had been locked in an embrace with Daschle up there in the high plains between the Dakotas and Minnesota for quite a while. But now there's a problem there. And let me just go through what I think is the essence of this problem. I think a public option is a very good idea. I don't know if it's feasible to go to an immediate single payer right now, but here's the situation. Private insurance is, first of all, for profit. It is deregulated. There is no patient's bill of rights that means anything, that forces any HMO to do anything in particular. You can't sue them. So it's for profit, deregulated, and you can't sue them, and your life depends on it. Now, that is absolutely unacceptable. Your life is at the mercy of a for-profit, rapacious businessman, in this case an insurance executive who's really just a finance oligarch in the insurance side of things, the older side, actually. When you look back to Venice, the insurance companies are older than the banks. So that's an interesting thing about the dynamics inside the finance oligarchy. It's for-profit, deregulated, you can't sue them, and your life depends on it. So that is unacceptable. Now, the question is, why would a government-sponsored or option be cheaper? Why might this offer some benefits? Well, because you would have control over the pay of the executives, right? A government bureaucrat will serve for $200,000, not $20 million. There would be no stock, therefore no dividends, so you're saving all the dividends. You don't need advertising at the same level. You don't have to spend a lot of money on advertising. And, huge item, you don't need to do lobbying at the level that the private company would have to do it, because you will have a constituency of senators for you in the first place. So I think, basically, on the whole, that makes it advisable that the United States government create a kind of Medicare for all in the form of a government-sponsored entity. People say the Republican argument is, oh, that's a slippery slope to socialize medicine on the British model. Well, no. Look at the United States Postal Service. This would be a good example. The U.S. Postal Service, not generally a recipient of tax money, generally speaking, self-supporting, which somehow finds a way to compete with FedEx and UPS and the other express company. So think of it that way. USPS competes with FedEx, hasn't driven them out of business. Similar for healthcare. Back in a minute.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
Here we are again with World Crisis Radio, Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. Healthcare, government option, probably a good idea to compete with these private companies, and we'll get to the most important reason in just a second. The Republican demagogues are telling you, do you want your health care controlled by a bureaucrat? Well, you already do. If you have any insurance at all, there is rationing of care being carried out by a corporate bureaucrat, a finance-motivated bureaucrat with his eye on the bottom line, anxious to sacrifice your life to the profitability of an insurance company that has engaged in poisonous derivatives speculation. So you're being asked to die for derivatives on that side. So corporate bureaucrat, on the other side, there will be a government bureaucrat. So corporate bureaucrat or government bureaucrat, isn't it better to be able to choose? Isn't it better to have a situation where you might be able to play the corporate bureaucrat against the government bureaucrat and vice versa to open up some space for the people? I don't think there's anything shocking about that. I don't care about this silly anti-big government stuff, because you're dealing with naked genocidal corporate power on the one side. Get the government into the picture and see what can come from such a conflict. My guess is that the government bureaucrat is going to be more vulnerable to agitation and political demands through the Congress and in the streets than the corporate bureaucrat has proved to be, simply because the government has to make some show of responding to agitation. And if you're skeptical, go out and try it. I can hear a lot of Austrians saying, oh, no, it's hopeless. It's hopeless. Let's just sit around and complain. And what's your program for tomorrow? To complain some more in the Austrian fashion. Well, that won't do it. Get out there and try politics before you give up. Now, here's the most important. You look at these insurance companies. If you leave it all in the hands of private insurance, what's the main problem? That they're bankrupt. AIG is bankrupt. What's AIG? The biggest insurance company in the world is AIG, and it is bankrupt. 180 to 200 billion of federal funds have gone in there. What bankrupted AIG? Derivatives, derivatives, derivatives through the London hedge fund, $3 trillion of derivatives, credit default swaps, and the rest of it. So you've also got the Hartford. The Hartford has taken several billion in TARP money, and there's a list here somewhere in my notes of the other insurance companies, but you get the picture. You cannot build your house on the private insurance companies exclusively because they're bankrupt. And that's the dirty secret of the whole thing. Why is Obama so interested in getting health care reform? Is he trying to help the people? Is he really that secret socialist that those right-wing characters would have you believe? No, surprise, he's a Wall Street puppet, and he's convoying, he's finding a way to gouge huge amounts of funds, $600 billion. Another TARP comes out of your hide under Medicare, Medicaid, and SCHIP and other procedures so that that can be given to the derivative speculators and the hedge fund hyenas of AIG and so forth. That's the secret. That's the urgency. And that's why the Republicans are saying, oh, no, heavens to Betsy, no public alternative. The public alternative would presumably not engage in derivative speculation. But again, that's up to the vigilance of the aroused citizenry. If they haven't been stupefied by Austrian and Chicago free market doctrine, they may get out there and assert their economic rights. Of course, the Austrians and the Chicago boys say you have no economic rights. Well, I say you do. And I say it's time to assert those rights in a timely way, because if you don't assert them, you have waived them. So that, I think, is the situation on the healthcare front. Now, the other thing this week we got from Obama is financial regulation. And this, of course, is another fraud. Here we have the idea that the Federal Reserve becomes the systemic risk regulator. This is a disaster. The Federal Reserve has struck out three times, 1929, the Federal Reserve created the hot money that created the bubble. They were doing this not to create the bubble. They were trying to help the British pound under Lord Montague Norman and Sir Winston Churchill. But that hot money nevertheless went into the Wall Street bubble of 1929. Then the Federal Reserve failed again in the banking crisis of 1932 to 1933. The Federal Reserve failed in the 1990s under Greenspan to stop derivatives. Greenspan became the biggest voice in favor of derivatives, attacking Brooksley Bourne of the Commodity Futures Trading Commission and other honest regulators who wanted at least make it reportable already, Alan. No, says Greenspan. And then, more recently, you look at these places like Wachovia. You look at, look at them all. Look at Citibank. Look at J.P. Morgan Chase. Look at all the derivatives monsters, all the zombie bankers that have grown up under the Greenspan Bernanke era at the Federal Reserve. So the idea of making the Federal Reserve the systemic risk regulator is monstrous. And indeed, you're hearing voices, which you often don't, on the floor of the Congress from all kinds of people saying, wait a minute, the local branches of the Federal Reserve are private entities. They're not controlled by the Board of Governors. They're controlled by regional banking interests, which indeed means the regional tentacles of Wall Street, because that's what it comes down to in this highly centralized situation. So the idea that the Fed, the Federal Reserve, could become a systemic risk regulator and intervene on any company, any financial interest that threatened the stability of the system is nonsense. Then we've got the wind down authority. As soon as you hear wind down, dear listeners, what do you know is going on? What can be wound down? Derivatives can be wound down. This is all this absurd dance, this kabuki theater of the ruling class, where they've got to talk about the Depression and they've got to talk about the measures they want, but they dare not say, prominently at least in the headlines, the word derivatives, because once you've said derivatives, you have identified the culprit. If it's derivatives, the bankers are the culprit. The bankers are the guilty party. So we're going to have a wind-down authority. If the financial company is at risk of collapsing and would endanger many other companies, the Treasury could appoint the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation or other agency for the orderly liquidation of the firm. Or as the Washington Post says, to orderly liquidate the firm. Somewhat tortured syntax. Citigroup, AIG, and all that. Well, this is obviously crazy. Derivatives must be shredded or tax them out of existence, which you can weaken them with taxation and then shred them, or some combination of those two. Think of it as a dialectical unity between taxing them out of existence with a Tobin tax and then shredding them. Consumer credit protection. This is a weak sister. This comes from Miss Prim. The Prim professor, Elizabeth Warren, Harvard Law School professor, heads the panel overseeing the TARP, and her weak and diluted and pathetic and pro forma ideas of regulation would then be implied in a consumer credit protection agency, which is too much for Wall Street, but far too little for the for yours truly here. And then finally, derivatives, but again, they don't say derivatives, shadow markets regulation. It means derivatives once again. So two out of four directly address derivatives without daring to say so. Hedge fund advisors, all hedge funds, would register and provide information to the Securities and Exchange Commission, and derivatives would be subject to government rules and oversight. Oh, wonderful. We're back to Brooks v. Bourne 10 years ago, but it's only 10 years too late. Too late on derivatives. Now, you want to hear a regulatory agenda. Here's a regulatory agenda. The first thing to do is to squeeze the derivatives bubble with a Tobin tax, 1% Tobin tax, securities transfer tax at the federal level, at the state level. Pile on. Cities can join in too. Tobin tax 1% on financial turnover, starting with derivatives. Existing derivatives, not just turnover. Special category for derivatives. All existing derivatives are taxed at 1%. This will take the life out of the booze for these speculators. Then we're going to have a similar Tobin tax, same Tobin tax applied to stocks, bonds, foreign exchange, commodity speculation, you name it. All speculative money flows. It's the only stream of so-called wealth which has not yet been touched. So that would be the leading edge of real regulation, and you get to a situation where the derivatives would be shredded.
The GCN Radio Network, providing the world with hard-hitting talk radio. GCN, great talk radio starts here.
Radio, we're just going through our actual re-regulation agenda. It's urgent, but the Obama one is an obscene joke. It actually gives more power to the Federal Reserve, the same people who have struck out so abysmally on all the main things that they've ever been asked to do over their 90-plus years of existence. So you need to fight derivatives, fight speculation, shut down the casino economy, the globalized hot money economy, stick a crowbar in the wheels of economic globalization with a securities transfer tax. And, of course, the money doesn't go to the United Nations, dear friends. It goes to the U.S. Treasury, and it lifts the tax burden off you. The whole idea of a New Deal approach to the Depression is, who should pay for the Depression? Should it be the bankers who created it, or you, who are an innocent bystander. The bankers say you should pay. And if you don't like that, get out there and fight, because if you just sit around and complain, you will be paying, because the bankers are in power. Right? This is the dictatorship of finance capital we have with the Wall Street puppet Obama. So derivatives, taxed, foreign exchange transactions, hot money of all kinds, commodity speculation, the options, futures, over-the-counter derivatives, designer derivatives, the exchange-traded derivatives, but also stocks, bonds, and everything else, paid by the broker, paid by the institutional broker. Figure it, it's the institutional side of each trade that has to pay it, not the individual. That's number one. Reimpose the Glass-Steagall Act. That means separate the stock brokerage from a commercial bank that's a member of the federally chartered banking community. That means J.P. Morgan Chase gets split. Well, it gets shut down, but just as a theory, J.P. Morgan Chase, J.P. Morgan, the stock brokerage, is split from Chase. Morgan Stanley Smith Barney, the Morgan Stanley is split. Since Morgan Stanley now calls itself a bank, they are split from Smith Barney. Bank of America Merrill Lynch is split again. And you say, how can you do that? Well, remember, federal courts have ordered the divestiture of AT&T, right? It used to be all one AT&T, and it was then split up, right? So you get Ameritel and Pactel and 9X and all the rest of this stuff. So same thing with Standard Oil of New Jersey. It was split. The federal government has the power to split up monopolies when they get to be too big. The only way you get rid of the concept of too big to fail is bust up monopolies and create smaller entities that can be allowed to fail and which cannot dictate to the entire government as they go into bankruptcy. The adjustable rate mortgages, which have wreaked such havoc. Again, we're up to 1 million foreclosures now in the crisis. Ban adjustable rate mortgages. Outlaw them. Foreclosures, outlaw them. Outlaw foreclosures. No foreclosures on primary residences, farms, or businesses for 5 years or the duration of the crisis. Let Wall Street eat those losses. Wall Street eats the losses. American families are protected in their homes. And, of course, then the property interest comes forward and say, well, why would anybody pay? Because you want to keep your home after the 5 years. If you've got an investment in your home, you have every reason to keep paying, because you want to have them. Once this runs out, 5 years or the duration of the crisis, then you won't be able to keep your home if you haven't been paying. So there is a reality principle at the end of it. But what you're trying to do is to stabilize things in the middle of the worst economic depression that we've ever seen. So no adjustable rate mortgages, no foreclosures. Concerning the markets, right, you got to get the Securities and Exchange Commission, impose that uptick rule, stop naked shorts, various measures against short selling, and wherever that margin requirement is, I think it's in the Fed still now, get that up to 100% margin requirement on stock speculation. Don't allow people to borrow money and speculate in stocks. Commodity Futures Trading Corporation, this is a big one. The price of gasoline is creeping up, 270, 280, looks bad. They're going to go for $4.50 to $5 again this summer. That's Goldman Sachs and Morgan Stanley and the hedge fund hyenas that follow them. And if you don't like that, don't, you know, call for the free market. It'll be even worse. The problem with this market is it's too free already. Make it less free by imposing position limits on massive speculators. Impose 100% margin requirements on those markets as well. And a systematic way of discriminating between the speculator on the one hand, who's got to be held in check, and the industrial end user, who's usually also a hedger, who's just trying to protect himself or herself from the fluctuations of the price. Here's another one. The free market says you should pay 30% on a credit card. We've got to have a government that says, no, you don't pay 30%, 10% ceiling on all credit cards, 10% the absolute top. Federal usury law, the anti-Volcker, right? We used to have usury laws. Volcker destroyed them 30 years ago in the last phase of trilateral dictatorship. let's impose a federal usury law that says 10% is the most. And they'll say, oh, no, then we'll go someplace else. Yeah, you want to leave the United States? Go ahead. Be my guest. We don't want you. The fewer usurers here, the less pollution we'll have. So impose a 10% federal usury law. That means the top interest on anything, from a credit card to a mortgage to a finance company loan, 10%. That's it. Obviously, the opposition will then cite Jeremy Bentham's distinguished essay in favor of usury. It's called In Defense of Usury. It's in the same library with Bentham's Defense of Pederasty and other classics of Bentham. So I'm sorry, no, Bentham, you are wrong. And Bentham, of course, the point where those two branches of the British East India Company come together, the Ricardo and the Malthus, of course, is that both of those are somehow in the spirit of Bentham. So that would be a reasonable regulatory agenda. And what Obama is offering is a monstrosity. Now, it looks like Obama, as we said at the beginning, is losing momentum. Washington Post headline today, June 18th, Thursday. Obama defends financial overhaul. He's on the defensive. But today, Friday, June 19th, Obama initiatives hit speed bumps on Capitol Hill. On the one side, people don't want to give more power to the Federal Reserve. Good. Keep attacking the Federal Reserve. The goal, however, is to nationalize it. If you took away the Federal Reserve, you just dissolve it, right? You're going to get a market. Who do you think is going to control the market? It's going to be Jamie Dimon of Chase, Pandit the Bandit of Citi, Ken Lewis of Bank of America, and so on down the line. Wells Fargo, Bank of New York Mellon. That's who's going to dominate the market. So if that's what you want, I'm sorry. That's totally inadequate. So Obama initiatives hitting speed bumps on Capitol Hill. People don't like the increased power for the Federal Reserve. And the Congressional Budget Office is now scoring Obama's healthcare plan. It costs $1.6 trillion. Well, I'm not so excited, so worked up about that. The main thing is it doesn't even cover 30 million people, and it probably takes away coverage from some people who are covered. The main question is no rationing of care. Nobody forced to die for the solvency of the system. Orsag, go home. Impeach Orsag. Impeach Geithner. Impeach Summers, or get him out of there, indict him, whatever you can do. And the other side of it then is realize that the Obama health care plan is a way to subsidize insurance companies who have lost big on derivatives like AIG, the Hartford, and others. It's trying to bail them out and gouge more money out of hospitals, out of payments to doctors. This is the process that was already going on under Bush. Obama wants to continue it. No hope, no change. The answer to all this, get the following books: Surviving the Cataclysm from ProgressivePress.com or Amazon.com. Obama the Postmodern Coup from Amazon.com or Progressive Press. And Barack H. Obama, the Unauthorized Biography. And don't forget Larry Sinclair's new book, now available at Barnes & Noble. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week.